Wednesday, June 8th. Welcome to Market Foolery. I'm Chris Hill. Joining me in studio today from Motley Fool, Rule Breakers, and Supernova, Aaron Bush and David Kretzmann. Happy Wednesday, gents.
Howdy.
Happy Wednesday.
Holy cow, we've got some news. This is like a buffet because we've got news. We've got earnings news. We've got CEO driven news. And then we've got this T-Mobile story that I still can't completely wrap my head around.
But its own category.
It is its own category, as is John Legere, as we've talked about on this podcast before. CEO John Legere at T-Mobile. We'll get to that. Let's start with the earnings news from Dave and Buster's. First quarter profits came in much higher than expected. Was anything bad in this quarter? The revenue was up, David. They raised guidance. They have a stock buyback plan. This looks like nothing but sunshine and rainbows.
They're doing really well, and I think Wall Street is probably particularly pleased just given how many restaurants are struggling right now. So for Dave & Buster's to put up such strong numbers, maintain and even raise guidance for the rest of the year, compared to what a lot of other restaurants are doing, even top-tier operators like Buffalo Wild Wings, Dave & Buster's, they're firing on all cylinders, as our friend Ron Gross would say.
the one thing that would concern me, and the stock is up about 8% this morning. It's hitting a new high. I'm wondering what you think of the valuation of the stock, because the one thing that would concern me about, for all of the good that they're doing on the operational front, this is very much a discretionary income kind of business. So unemployment is relatively low. Things are generally good in the U.S. economy. And so this is the type of business that would do well when the economy is doing well. But I feel like if things turn, this is the first place that people who are spending their discretionary income just go, I got to cut back on Dave & Buster's.
Yeah, that's definitely the big question, and probably one of the bigger risks longer term with the company. They make more than half their sales through the arcade games in the restaurants. So people will go into the restaurants, they'll buy food, which makes up about 30% of revenue, buy a drink that makes up about 15% of revenue, which is above the average for restaurants. So they really are trying to get people in there and playing these games, which are higher margin and are driving a lot of the results that we're seeing. Management thinks they can open more than 200 of these stores in North America. They have still under 90 stores today. They have 84 at the close of this quarter. That's it.
So that's Shake Shack level.
So they could more than double their store count. And something I do like about Dave & Buster's is that they are expanding through their own free cash flow. They're not dependent on outside debt or issuing equity to expand. They're generating strong and increasing amounts of operating cash flow. They can use the free cash flow to open new stores. So right now they're expanding in a sustainable way. But again, the question is, how will the company survive through another recession, which will inevitably come at some point? Can the company stick around through a recession and survive through an ordeal like that? I think the answer is yes, because this is a company that has been around since the 80s, but certainly they would be hit hard come recession, and the stock certainly isn't cheap, as you pointed out. So investors need to they need to be prepared for volatility. But looking out 5 to 10 years, if they can take steps to double that store base and beyond, I think it could be a winner.
It was just 3 years ago this month that Amazon launched its subsidiary in India. Last night, CEO Jeff Bezos announced the company is investing another $3 billion in its subsidiary. Aaron, this is on top of the $2 billion they had originally invested. Mm-hmm. And they've got competition in India. They've
a little bit.
Yeah. Snapdeal, Flipkart. Legitimate competition for Amazon, and yet I'm inclined to think that Jeff Bezos knows exactly what he's doing, even though they don't necessarily have $3 billion just sitting around in their sofas.
Yeah, I mean, I like what they're doing here. I like it for two main reasons. The first being that international for Amazon is about half the size of their domestic business. But despite that, it's actually growing much more slowly than the domestic business. Their international business is only up 6% in 2015, which I don't think that many people realize. And so by them kind of pinpointing a new market and say, hey, we're going to go to this one, and not only are we just going to do it, we're going to double down and get serious about it. And it's kind of hard to know like how serious they're getting investing in India. I mean, they could put down $10 billion if they wanted to or more. But I do think it's a good move just for branching out for a new market to tackle. And then I think India is a really smart choice. And I would make that my second point. Not only is India a massive populous country, but the country is in its very, very early days of widespread internet use and e-commerce. India is only at 35% internet penetration, and that number is rising very quickly. The money spent on e-commerce purchases has nearly tripled just over the past year to only $16 billion. And India is just getting started with that. And so I'm really excited to see Amazon pushing into such a massive market when it's so early. And it kind of reminds me of Mercado Libre a little bit, which is kind of the Amazon eBay of Latin America, just without the political risk and the currency headaches.
No, I think of this along the same lines. With India, you have about a 35% internet penetration rate, and that's lower than what you see in Latin America, which has about a 56% internet mm-hmm. penetration rate. We have about 88% internet penetration, for comparison's sake, in the U.S. So, you know, looking out 5, 10 plus years, and we all know that that's the time horizon that Jeff Bezos employs with Amazon, you would assume that more people in India will get access to the internet and more people will buy more stuff online once they have that internet access. So pretty clear, transparent, obvious trends. And I think, you know, there's still a lot of opportunity in India. So I think this investment really makes sense considering, you know, the long-term time horizon that Bezos employees.
Yeah, they don't have the first mover advantage here, as you mentioned with Flipkart and Snapdeal, but I'm not entirely sure that matters, just because it's so nascent and there's so much room to build up infrastructure around all of this. And so Flipkart is the number one, but they only have a $15 billion valuation, which is a stretch, just kind of given private market valuations right now. And Snapdeal is about one third of the size of Flipkart. So altogether, it's really only about a $20 billion like market, just like with the two leaders put together. And I like Amazon getting into this because they can fund their expansion just through their own cash flow. Flipkart, Snapdeal, they have to go basically beg for money from venture capitalists, and they're burning so much money right now. And when the funding dries up a little bit, they've had to resort to laying off workers and having less deals out there. And so Amazon's not going to have those problems, and it can just build distribution centers and data warehouses and all that kind of stuff without the same worries that others have. And it could mean that they could pass them up sometime because of it.
And going back to the market opportunity in India, on the most recent conference call for Apple, Tim Cook mentioned that he sees India today in a similar position that China was maybe 5, 7, 10 years ago. So that also speaks to the long-term opportunity that India presents.
There was a conference out in California last week that Recode put on, and Walt Mossberg did a sit-down interview in front of a live audience with Jeff Bezos, and it ended up going about an hour and 20 minutes, and I watched almost all of it. It was streaming on Facebook Live, so I just sort of geeked out and watched it as it was happening. And Mossberg's such a phenomenal interviewer. It was really a master performance. But one of the questions Bezos got from the audience was about their expansion into China and India. And he was very quick to give credit to their team in India. And he talked about how, you know, one of the things that they've learned, and this is, you know, and he sort of gave a nod towards, you would think this would be obvious, but, you know, we learned it anyway. It's that China and India are very different markets. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've done is we've done much more local market customization in India than we've done in China. And again, giving tons of credit to his team there. So as a shareholder of Amazon, one of my takeaways from that was, okay, so I really shouldn't, I should expect a little bit more out of what they're doing in India than China, despite, you know, mm-hmm. China obviously being a larger market.
No, I think it's an interesting point because, you know, the the Amazon user face that customers have in India will be different than what we experience in the U.S. In India and a lot of emerging markets, the bulk of people don't use desktops. You know, they don't use PCs. They're buying stuff and they're accessing the internet through their smartphones. So it's crucial for Amazon and other e-commerce players to adapt to the local markets and match, you know, the preferences and habits of those local customers.
You know what? A couple of our dozens of listeners are in India, so I would love it. I'm just going to, and I rarely do this, but if anyone in India could just drop us an email to marketfoolery@fool.com and share your own e-commerce experience, whether it's with Flipkart, Snapdeal, Amazon, India, whatever it is. But that would just be great to get a little, as we say, a little boots on the ground research there.
Sure.
John Laguerre, the CEO of T-Mobile, is at it again. He unveiled a new program called Stock Up, which enables T-Mobile customers to become shareholders. David, you were interviewed by the Washington Post about this. Walk me through how this works.
Yeah, really, my understanding of this, I'm a T-Mobile customer, so I'm trying to find ways to get my share of stock. But really, this is targeting postpaid voice smartphone users. So if you have a voice plan through T-Mobile, you have a smartphone, they're giving you a share of stock this month. And then they're also recruiting, giving a share of stock to new customers of T-Mobile this month as well. And then they're upping the ante here. They're giving T-Mobile customers the chance to earn up to 100 shares of stock a year, and that's worth over $4,000 in shares based on the current share price, just by referring friends and family and other people to T-Mobile. And so, assuming you refer someone, they join T-Mobile, you can keep accumulating shares. So really, the way I take a high level look at this, they're really creating a brand ambassadors program. They want, obviously, they want higher customer retention. They want people to stay with T-Mobile, you know, for many years or for life. And they want people, their existing customers, to be brand ambassadors and recruit other people around them. So, you know, it'll be interesting. There's never really been anything done quite like this before. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes.
Yeah, I think it's a noble pursuit, and it is foolish what they're doing. I do have my reservations, though. I'll admit, I think it probably won't end up a very huge deal for them, just because I don't know if people find particular joy in who their mobile carrier is generally. And the logistics that go into that, having a brokerage account, dealing with the taxes. Most people are kind of financially ignorant when it comes to all of that stuff, that I think that it'll be tough for a lot of people to come around to that, to where it really matters.
Well, that's the thing. I can see this working out to some degree. I'm just not sure to what degree. I could see someone like Kretzmann saying, hey, this is great. I've got an account. I'm a customer. Mm-hmm. Great. Go ahead and put that share in my account. I can also see lots of other people who are customers who don't have an account. And then it's the work of, wait a minute. Okay, so now I have to go get a brokerage account. I want to probably do some research about who I want to do that with. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, probably a lot of them, to the extent that they're going through this process, will say something along the lines of, yeah, can't you just give me the $40? Can't you just, you know, if you're giving me a share of stock that today is worth just north of $40, can't you just give me a $40 rebate on my bill?
I hope the program is successful, because obviously at The Fool, you know, something that David Gardner mentions is he thinks everyone should own at least one stock. So for a lot of T-Mobile's customers, I think, you know, there are about 30 million customers who would be eligible to get a share under this program. I don't think they'll end up giving near that many shares. You know, so this program could be a nice, you know, step in the right direction to get people invested. But I do kind of have my reservations just based on my own experience trying to get my share. It isn't a very intuitive process. I'm not really, like, they tell you have to download the T-Mobile Tuesdays app, which is another app that they released in conjunction with the Stock Up announcement. I downloaded that app, and it doesn't even mention anything about the stock, so then I have to, you know, talk to their customer service. I don't think many people are going to jump through that loophole when a lot of people might not even know what a stock is or how to open a brokerage account. So I don't know if this will be a mass success, but I think, you know, it's It's an innovative step, but yeah, I don't know if it'll really have any huge.
Can I just say that this what you just said does not bode well at all for T-Mobile with this plan?
So
because,
far, yeah.
And forgive me for pointing out the obvious. This is your job. You're someone who is a stock analyst. You're a T-Mobile customer. So if you are struggling with this,
doesn't bode well.
That doesn't bode well at all.
Yeah, I'll put a slight twist on things. I don't think this is going to work very well for T-Mobile, and I don't know if many larger businesses will follow suit, but I do think we will see a trend towards smaller companies doing something like this. Not necessarily them just handing out shares to their customers, but more when they need to raise money, they will go to their customers. With Regulation A of the Jobs Act, it finally went through. This past year, Elio Motors was the first one to raise money from its customers for its own version of the IPO. I think stuff like that is going to become the way to go. And I think brand is becoming a bigger part of identity, especially with online services and social media being a reflection of who you are, that more companies are going to start taking this seriously. And their very best customers, who are generally more cutting edge and more willing to stay on board for the long term, that it could work in those cases where they really can take pride in helping a company succeed. But with this T-Mobile, it seems more like a difficult cash grab than anything.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we can give them credit because this has been a great PR move.
You know, oh, yeah.
A lot of people are covering. I think in that sense it's a success, but long term I have a hard time with how the program is structured now. You know, it's just not set up in a very user friendly way. Like, it's not easy for someone to, you have to set up an account with a certain brokerage, Loyal3. There are all these different hoops you have to jump through to get that share, and I don't think many people will do that. But I agree with Aaron that we're definitely seeing a trend where. Especially smaller companies, they want their customers to be part owners of the company. They want these loyal customers to, have that sense of ownership, and they want customers who want that company to succeed over the long term. So you're seeing with some IPOs, companies will reserve a small portion of the IPO for their customers and invite their customers to participate in the IPO, which typically is reserved for, the Wall Street banks. So I think you will see that trend. And T-Mobile here, it's a noble effort, but probably won't be a long-lasting success with how it's currently structured.
No, and you raise a good point, because I think that it is in keeping with a lot of what John Laguerre has done in the public eye in terms of being very customer-centric. Mm-hmm. So if someone is going to come forth with this type of effort, it makes sense that it is someone like Laguerre. It is a company like T-Mobile, as opposed to, say, Procter & Gamble or just some other – like I get why he's doing it. Mm-hmm. But I'm intrigued by what you laid out, Aaron, just the idea that, okay, maybe this doesn't work, but maybe this is just version 1.0, and it gets other companies thinking about, okay, if we were going to try and execute something like this, how would we make it – mm-hmm. How would we smooth out the speed bumps? How would we make this more seamless and make it even easier? Because ultimately, if you are looking to lock in not just customers, but convert those customers into long-term part owners of the business, then looking at what Laguerre is doing and thinking to yourself, how can we improve on this? I think that's a smart move.
Mm-hmm. I hope it's a catalyst. I think with the democratization of all the tech that goes into this, could be the dawn of a new era a little bit.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As always, people on the program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and the Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against. So don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. That's going to do it for this edition of Market Foolery. The show is mixed by Austin Morgan. I'm Chris Hill. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll